There you are. Hello. This is the right room for the comedy character crash course in comedy characters course, is it?
No. This is a controlled infection zone for anthrax. Get out. Get out before you die.
What? I don't want to die. Oh, I see. Oh, yes. Humour. You've created an acerbic and dark, witty comedy character. Maybe not funny to me, because I'm the butt of your humour, but to someone else looking in, oh, you're good. Right, so, looks like I am in the right place, so I'd like to create a new comedy character, please.
I'm sorry, you've already got one.
You are?
You don't need another. I mean, have you seen what you're wearing? Absolutely hilarious.
My clothes? These are just my normal...
And your face.
My face?
Wow. Your voice. Your voice is hysterical.
Is it? Is it? Oh, well, thank you very much. So, if you think I'm already funny, then I must be funny.
Yes! Belief in your own funny is important. If you think you're funny, you might actually stand a chance of being funny.
All right. Do I write that down?
No! Get out!
Oh, sorry, right. Oh, okay.
No. Come back.
Come back.
It's just my little joke.
Joke.
Oh, lesson one over. Thank you. Goodbye.
Is that it?
Uh-huh.
But you're just one person, so someone else might not find me funny at all.
Well, yes. Yes, that's lesson two. I won't see you again. You never knew me. Goodbye.
Where are you going? Don't jump out the... window. Oh, you're funny. Funny chap. Welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast, brought to you by the Audio Drama Network. Yeah! I'm Sarah Golding, hello, and today's guest is amazing character comedy actor Peter Aldring. He's talking to me about how he created the satirical guru of modern thought speak, Dexter Goff, man! And you can get tips on creating comedy characters, nurturing that comedy team and marketing, and why do you need a Learjet? So get ready to eat those thought dogs, guys. All the thought dogs, man. Okay, enjoy. Hello and welcome to the show. We have Peter Aldring. Hello.
Sarah, hello. How are you?
I am very excited to speak to you as your lovely alter ego, Dexter Goff, has got a lot of things to say. For those that don't know, can you just a little potted history of your amazing career so far?
I started out going to a theater school in Canada. I'm originally from Canada. You know, my background was always improvising, doing comedy, live theater. I went to a theater program, and then I performed with a troupe in Toronto called The Second City, mm-hmm. which is improv, sketch comedy background. And sort of in that improv world, it really lends itself to doing voiceover for animation, to sort of coming up with characters on the spot. I sort of spend my time, half of it in the voiceover world, and then half of it in doing some on-camera work as well. And then, of course, producing a couple of podcasts. As most of us know in this business, you've got to wear multiple hats,
yes.
many irons, many fires.
Oh my goodness, I've burnt myself several times.
Yes, I'm surrounded by fire. Everything's burning around me. There's a lot of fire for me to get my irons
in. Hot. Do you listen to a lot of podcasts yourself?
I find myself actually in the podcast world a bit more interested in serial documentary style podcasts and being taken on sort of a longer story arcing narrative, you know, which obviously in the world of podcasting is one of the incredible things to sort of have a story develop over the course of several episodes. And I really enjoy hearing the broad spectrum of real, true people.
Mm, yes. Now, audio fiction-wise, are there anything that you would recommend people to listen to that you found either recently or you're a massive long-term fan of?
I'm sure, you know, the things that I'm listening to, I'm sure a lot of people are as well. S-Town people, I'm sure beyond familiar with. I just, yeah. I mean, there's just some incredible characters in that. My dad wrote a porno. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard of Spontaneanation. Have you heard of that?
It's
Paul F. Tompkins, and this is one of the a few comedic podcasts that I enjoy listening to, but he's a relatively well-regarded indie comedy person here in the U.S., and he always has fascinating, hilarious guests on. I consume my news from, like, The Daily on New York Times. And
and how about your comedy heroes? Because obviously you're strongly drawn to comedy. Who kind of has inspired you in comedy to create?
Probably one of my biggest all-time iconic heroes is Peter Sellers.
Oh,
As a kid, I...
Not my dad. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I honestly... I love his work, and as a kid I loved his characters. The thing that's interesting about Peter Sellers is that he can play these rather buffoonish characters, but at the same time he does it with such a strangely subtle, sincere, deft touch that it's this unusual mix of things. And I think why I like it so much is that he does play these pretty outlandish, hilarious characters, but he's very committed and very sincere, I think would be one way of saying it. But
the heart is there, isn't it?
Yes, heart is there, and it just makes the world that much more real. Absolutely love his work. Very difficult to not grow up in Canada and be a fan of SCTV, which would be Martin Short, John Candy, Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, Dave Thomas, Rick Moranis. You know, as I was growing up, they would... had a sketch comedy show. I absolutely loved their crazy characters. Definitely broader than what Peter Sellers would do, but and lived in the world of sketch comedy. But you know, those people for me really became people that I looked up to a great deal, admired a great deal, and actually what really ultimately led me getting into improvisation, and then eventually actually joining the Second City in Toronto, which was basically what they started.
Exciting. And that has brought you to your current series that's out and being absolutely fantastic. If you haven't heard it already, Dexter Guff is Smarter Than You is definitely worth having a punt on, I'd say. regarding the character of Dexter, because I guess he's different from you.
No, it's the same. It's the easiest character I've ever played. It's very autobiographical.
But yeah, I just like put down something. So the only difference between earning and learning is an L. Drop that L. Or there is nothing more powerful than words in between quotations, and you have to see that written down, so it doesn't really work on audio.
But yes, of course.
But there's put your ears on my mouth. There's lots of fun, crazy things. So can you just fill the audience in about your character of Dexter and how did Dexter manifest?
Dexter is kind of a satirical look, a comedic satirical look at the world of self-help and, social media influencers. Mm-hmm. So these are sort of, which in podcasting, there's an awful lot of people who are kind of out there with a program telling you how to lead your life and telling you the smartest way to buy a Ferrari, the quickest fix for a relationship, sort of all of these different tropes of self-help. Dexter Guff kind of takes a poke at all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then some. exactly. And so we were actually approached by a Panoply, which is a podcasting company out of New York that both produce and distribute podcasts. And they had seen a comedy video that we did. And when I say we, I'm talking about myself and then the two creating partners and producers of Dexter Guff is Smarter Than You, which is Pat Kelly and Chris Kelly. Uh-huh. Oddly enough, not brothers. So there's no nepotism. There's just a lot of Kellys in the world, it seems. But Pat Kelly and Chris Kelly and I had done a video in which Pat was kind of self-narrating a TED Talk. So we were contacted by Panoply, and they said, they really responded to the idea of having some fun in the world of thinkfluencers, as we might say. That was kind of the beginning of the discussion about, well, let's create this character. And he's kind of the guy who is telling people how to lead their life, but maybe he is not necessarily the best person to be giving advice.
Isn't that always the way?
That doesn't slow him down. In the course of the show itself, we also wanted to have a narrative. We really wanted to not only have fun, kind of a comedy version of playing in this world of thought leaders, but we also wanted to have a story that over 10 episodes begins to kind of bear fruit. And
yes.
So we kind of drop these little hints and seeds and moments as we go through the 10-episode season that ultimately culminates in the last handful of episodes with a lot of things, a lot of Dexter's own personal life kind of coming in and infiltrating the show in general.
Yes, yes, he kind of gets slapped around the face with quite a few parts of his life.
There's a feature interview in every episode, and it's with other incredible comedic talents who are either playing authors or, Dex also likes to wax and wane poetic in an opening moment of the show where he takes people into the thought palace to give his thought release.
Quite exciting.
To kind of give context to what the episode is supposed to be about.
We've got quite a few writers and producers and directors on our kind of listening crew. And how did you develop this then? So you've got the core idea of the central character and the other people that potentially can interact with. How much of it was improvised and how much did you completely write to the nth degree?
Right. The working relationship that I've had with Pat Kelly, who I have, you know, we've been creative partners for, oh my gosh, over half our lives, 20-odd years. Our background was always improvising. And, we had grown up together, and there was an improv theater in the city of Calgary where we grew up called the Loose Moose Theater. And so the Loose Moose Theater was actually sort of the brainchild of a fellow named Keith Johnstone, who he invented theater sports. Improvisation, but set in a sports. Our background was improvising, and that really is how we like to work together. And so on Dexter Guff, what we ultimately did is, because we also wanted to have an ongoing driving narrative, we sort of had these elements that we would kind of inject into every episode. So we would have a very, very loose structural outline of the episode, basically the theme of the episode, what things are happening in Dexter's life that kind of infiltrate the episode. We would have an interview with another comedic performer and sort of either we would suggest a character for them to bring in, or they might, they would come to us with, what about if it's a character who kind of works in this world? We would then simply improvise. And, you know, if we would throw out an offer, if we would bring in a character, if a character came up in the improvisation, if talking about a character from Dexter's past or someone that Dexter's currently working with, if it came up in the improvisation, oftentimes that would be a character that would be revisited down the road. So we're also leaving space for, if we go off on a tangent, if something else is brought up that sort of makes sense in Dexter's life or not, a seed is planted and it sort of grows in episodes later on.
I guess the danger of that is then having far too much material, because your episodes are generally around 20-something minutes, aren't they? And I guess that's why did you decide that is the kind of format of the show?
Like 20, 25 minutes is really where we sort of felt was our sweet spot. I think part of that is informed by the fact that, you know, Pat and Chris and I have done a satirical comedy show which actually pokes fun at public radio. We have done this satirical show for 7 or 8 years, which really kind of pokes fun at the tone and the world of CBC radio. But it sounds as though you're listening to a magazine-style show on a public broadcaster with interviews from a fake politician to someone in business to someone in small town nowhere in Canada. That show always runs about 26 minutes. So that show is called This Is That. One of the sort of most popular parts of our show, of the show This Is That, is that we do have a listener feedback section in every show where we simply play feedback that we've received from the show the week before on our answering service. No joke, 2-3 hours of messages of people phoning in believing what we're broadcasting as truth. We've even had stories picked up by legitimate news organizations, the Washington Post, New York Magazine, that have actually taken our bogus stories and taken them for truth. It's very clear. It's very clear who believes this is a real show and who sort of clearly sees the satire in it. It's comedy based, but we're trying to play it very earnestly. We're trying to play it very sincerely. You know, Dexter Guff is born out of that same tone that we would do with our other program, This Is That. It's born out of that tone of we want him to sound like a real person because it's for a satirical purpose that makes the satire maybe that much stronger, that you sort of go, yeah, this guy isn't that much off of really one fringe element of what some of this self-help world is.
I'm a massive fan of David Brent and The Office over here, which then obviously went over to America and did the American version. And I think there is something about that when you're looking at these characters and you kind of, you just are feeling the tragedy that's about to happen and
exactly.
You laugh
it's a little
at
like
them.
Steve Coogan. It's that line of comedy tragedy. It's played very sincerely. It's really ultimately very ridiculous. Which is what's so delicious about it, you know?
Yeah. Why I love your podcast is because there's not a lot like that currently, and it really stands out as being something really quite fun that I think people who love their comedy will enjoy because of that.
We did have quite a conversation at the beginning of doing Dexter Guff and saying, you know, do we want to broadcast that this is a comedy? Do we call it out at the beginning? It's kind of a double-edged sword, really, because you know, those that don't see it as comedy, those that sort of believe that there's just this blowhard, arrogant SOB who is all about himself and is just telling people, you know, how to make money in the most circuitous ways, those that take that as truth, they're really upset. They don't know that it's going to be satirical. They don't know that it's going to be funny. They just sort of go, oh, this is another one of those jerks that's telling me how to live my life. Those that then pick up on the satire, that know it right away or that discover the satire of it, it makes it somehow enjoyable for them to know that there are people that are unable to see that this is satirical. You know, those that know that it's satirical, I think that they do get a kick out of some folks that can't quite see that.
And with regards to your demographic and who is listening to these, do you kind of get obsessed with all that kind of thing?
I personally do not. It's a strange one because as anyone that is a creator, I don't try to think that much on that side of it. What I really think about when I'm working on the show is kind of obviously the character of Dexter Guff, the story, and just thinking about what would be true in Dexter's world. And so I don't sort of dwell too much on that side of, you know, the demographics question, really. Whatever creative voice that we're putting out there, people are responding to it. Yeah. And I don't really want to cater it one way or the other because we think it could be a younger demographic. We think it could be an older demographic.
And I mean, I don't know if we can channel some Dexter now, but there's a lot of people who are always asking on our forums, how do I market? What do I do? And I mean, what top tips could you give, either as Dexter or yourself, just as how? Yes, sir.
You know, I will tell you what. If I was to do it as Dexter Guff,
yes, come on.
First of all, we'd have to get a contract in place because I can tell you whatever
we can pay
in love. Dexter Guff Marketing 101.
It's just love. Love is all we can pay in.
I'll tell you one of the things that that I find works great is find if you can and however much it costs, it's worth it. Get yourself in front of a Learjet. So this is something that is a private plane, something red carpet leading up to those stairs. Get yourself in front of that plane. Get a snapshot and just put on that picture that you're going to blast out on social, just say something like, you know, winners get trophies. What you're trying to do is you're trying to introduce to the world who you are. Mm-hmm. And who you are better be someone on a Learjet. Otherwise, what are you going to tell me that I need to know? So that's kind of where it starts.
Amazing.
That's where it starts. Get in front of that plane. And if you have the money, and if you don't worry, it'll come. The money will follow. But if you have it, I take it for a ride. Take it for a spin. A lot of fun. Get up there 40,000 feet. Really gas that thing up. See if you can get close to breaking the speed of sound. A lot of fun. Good times.
Superb.
Just get yourself in front of something very flashy.
Superb.
But as far as marketing for in podcasting, I do think one of the strongest things to be able to do is exactly what we're doing now, which is talking on other podcasts. Mm-hmm. You know, the podcast space, there's just so much incredible stuff to listen to that it really becomes, well, how do you how do you set yourself apart? How do you, you know, get yourself out there to as many ears as you can? And obviously getting a chance to talk a little bit about the show, a little bit about the character on your podcast, on other people's podcasts is a great way of doing it. And then also for us, you know, we try to actively engage in on social media, whether it's Twitter, Instagram. Part of the Dexter Guff podcast does ask for people to hit him up on Twitter, send in questions that they have for Dex. And so we're really trying to find ways of interacting with our audience.
That's so relevant, isn't it? And it is making yourself stand above the parapet of now a sea of podcasting adventures that people can choose. So,
you know, I know that for a lot of us, we get podcasts that come recommended through a friend. Uh-huh. And you'll go, oh, what was that? I've never even heard of that. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. And so I think in a lot of ways, that's what we rely on as well, is just kind of trying to engage friends, listeners on social media, and see if they're interested in sharing our program with their friends.
With regards to your tastes, is there anything missing from your pile of podcast listens? What do you think, if any, there's gaps in the market for that people can perhaps pitch? And
there is space right now for, because there are all of those true crime or true mystery narratives that sort of follow a similar story arc, or in a lot of those real documentary stories, you get these incredible real characters and almost hard to believe, you know, when I think of something like an S-Town or something, but they're often told in a similar way. If you listen to a couple minutes of any one of those programs, whether it's the music stings, whether it's the narration, whether it's even these peculiar voices coming in together, I think part of what we love about listening to those types of serialized programs is that there are so many unexpected twists and turns, and that's kind of what you know, that kind of keeps you hanging on episode to episode. And I kind of think doing that, but having it in a comedic way, that's kind of
maybe
the world.
S-Town for kids.
It's a darkly funny, incredible listen. And I don't know, you know, satirizing that is very difficult because you sort of go, well, can you make a character as engaging and hilarious as the main guy in S-Town, right? That's kind of that earnest, drier, played for truth. Comedy that's a long history in the UK of these absurd situations, absurd characters, but played very dead straight.
Yes,
and I think that's something that I've always really responded to, and it's really inspired the comedic voice that we kind of like to play with.
Because I've done improvisations around characters, of directors and producers have said, you know, Sarah improvises in brackets. What I find fascinating, because you just jumped straight into Dexter there, and it's that whole transition of you into this character and how that kind of so flows beautifully out of your mouth. And I mean, people who potentially see themselves as not good improvisers and or that want to practice that kind of thing, how can you recommend that they immerse themselves in that kind of style of acting?
My introduction into any form of performance was really through improvisation. I mean, it's something that I've done since I was, 14 years old, 14 or 15. And for, a period of time when I was at university, before I went to theater school, I was doing 7 shows a week improvising.
Wow.
At a comedy club in Canada, we would do 6 shows a week as a half-hour middle spot in a stand-up comedy room, me and 2 other guys. And then I would do a 7th show on Sundays at this theater that Keith Johnstone had, started. And so I was just so immersed in it early on that it became really second nature to me. When you are improvising on a show, something like Dexter Guff, that we would have a lot of material. We kind of, I wouldn't say gave ourselves a crash course, but actually in our show, This Is That, we learned very early on that if we weren't more specific about what the beats were in a story, that we would end up having a bunch of material and it would just be arduous to have to listen through and edit. And so we got really, really very good at kind of economically approaching our improvised scenes, knowing what the information is that needs to get out, have a great turn of phrase, have whatever organic comedic interaction occur, but reminding ourselves always about story, telling that story. And so for us, that's become something that I think we've really gotten much, much better at. Story is imperative in improvisation. And then, of course, the other one is just having the opportunity to improvise, whether that's finding an improv theater, whether that's finding a couple of other people that are interested in improvising, but really just simply doing it. I don't really have any shortcuts around it. I mean, there's certainly a handful of go-to improv rules, you know, about listening and offers and this, that, and the other. But ultimately, you know, it's all second nature to me now, and that's just simply as a result of doing it. I also do a lot of voice acting here in Los Angeles, and you are often not given a ton of specific direction for what they're looking for, in particular as it relates to things like animation. Knowing that that is the truth, I never really try to think about what they are looking for, because the fact of the matter is, there is such a broad spectrum of possibility of what this character could tonally sound like that it's a stab in the dark anyways. I much rather just kind of at first on a script, at first read of something, I really open myself to whatever voice comes from that as I'm reading it in my head. In other words, I'm really just sort of trusting my own impulse, not second guessing it, not trying to imagine exactly what they're looking for, but rather go, if I wrote this, if this is what I wrote, what do I think sounds funny, appropriate, interesting? It does become that thing where you just simply have to kind of trust your own impulse on that. In the best case scenario, if this is something that goes on and on, what is it that you would want to do?
Yeah, I think that is quite interesting with that progression of a character and how you then develop, over a longer period of time. And it's remembering what you've done.
From, you know, a perspective that I have had success in the past with as well is, you know, when you get to that point where you are in something like animation, where you actually then get in front of the people that are the creators of the show, that are creators, producers, director, they're not all in agreement with what they're looking for, that they each have kind of something that they're interested in and listening for. And so actually, from a performer's point of view, I have had some success in going in and walking through the character with them. So in other words, it's kind of like, so do you think that he sort of sounds like this? And someone will say like, less nose. And you're like, okay, so he's kind of a bit like that. Yeah, more marble mouth. Okay, so he's sort of a bit like that. Yeah, maybe he's a little bit heavier. Okay, so he's kind of a bit like that. And you, like kind of doing this funny dance where once everybody kind of comes into agreement on that sound, then you launch into the read. To get to that point, typically you've recorded an audition in your voice studio or at your agent's or with a casting director, and you really might not be given much information on what it is that they're looking for. And so that's when you sort of go, well, I'm not going to guess what they want. I'm going to put my spin on it, whatever I'm sort of inspired by in the moment. Yeah. And then if that's something that speaks to them, then you get in front of them and you get the opportunity to go like, okay, well, you guys obviously responded to whatever my initial impulse was. So let's refine this a little bit and hear what you are hearing.
With regards to the lovely Dexter Guff, I'm not going to give away what happens because people must listen. But could you tell us what's next for Guff?
In our mind, when we had done the show, decided what the show would be. And in our minds, we really like this idea of serializing it, of having 10 episodes and that a story is told and that there is sort of that the person that Dexter is at the beginning of the season is nowhere close to where Dexter is at the end of the season. As the season progresses, there are some very unusual twists and turns and that really kind of compel the listener to sort of go, so what happens in season two?
Totally. I'm there. And there are some very uncomfortable moments and you're thinking, no, Dexter, don't carry on this conversation, please.
You know, I think that was one of the things that we really wanted to explore was this notion that on the surface, you hear this guy who's a real, has an incredible ego and the rest of it sort of going for him. But we wanted to this needs to be somebody that's likable. And that to do that, I think that over the course of the shows, you see this, there is a human element to Dexter without question that I think it's like you say, you begin to sort of listen and go, oh no, what is he doing?
Yeah.
True to the form of a lot of these self-help guys, they're pretty self-assured blowhards. Yes. We also wanted to sort of, you know, make sure that there's this human element to Dexter that people want to pull for this guy. You can go to obviously Apple Podcasts or anywhere that you get your podcast and simply look for Dexter Guff is smarter than you, and you can be too. But I think if you just put in Dexter Guff, you'll probably find good old Dexter Guff as well. And actually, yes. I will let a little cat out of the bag.
Ooh.
Dexter Guff has a website.
Uh-huh.
And Dexter Guff's website is DexterGuffMusic.com. So if you were trying to reach out to Dexter, then you go to DexterGuffMusic.com. Mm-hmm. And Dex teases throughout the season,
mm-hmm,
that he has a background a little bit in music, doesn't want to go into it, doesn't want to touch on it. So this website is a throwback to Dexter's musical attempts, maybe in a previous life. This is another little secret. We also have the website DexterGuff.com.
Uh-huh.
And we've set it up as a dummy plumbing site so that Dexter could be furious that somebody has DexterGuff.com and he's relegated to using DexterGuffMusic.com.
I did see that, and I did believe, yes, it was a plumber.
Yes. Okay, so, but I think it gives a little insight into the idea of some of the kind of sincere fun that we try to have, which is that we are fighting ourselves for this website.
And how about you as an actor? Where can people follow you and find you?
Obviously, my name is Peter Oldring, and upcoming, it's a good question. I was in this past season of House of Cards.
Oh, wicked.
Which was really an absolute treat to be in, despite obviously the what's happening now.
Oh, clouds of grayness, yes.
Yes, 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 yes. And I'm also doing an episode of Blind Spot, which is a show on NBC, quite a dramatic show, actually, that is upcoming. Also come and take a look on This Is That, which is, you can find at CBC, www.cbc.ca/thisisthat. So if you're sort of looking for a rabbit hole of comedy videos and audio to go down, check out This Is That as well.
Oh, well, thank you so, so much for giving up your time to talk to us. And I'm very excited to see where these characters go next, because I think there's not enough comedy, really. I know there's lots, but there still needs to be more. And this is a wonderful gem in a sea of craziness.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah. Yeah, and honestly, a pleasure to speak to you. And as you know, all of these, when we're talking about podcasting and simply being a creative individual, the real reason for doing it is because you creatively are inspired to, to make this show, to make this character, to do whatever you're doing. And so for us, it really is just something that we are doing because we enjoy it, because we think this is funny, because this is something that we want to share. All you can do is kind of listen to that creative part of yourself and go, you know what, this is really engaging me right now. I just want to work on this and share it and see what happens.
Exciting. Yeah, I do feel that. I've given up teaching to become a full-time podcaster, and I'm having the time of my life. It's great fun. And I get to talk to people like you, which is even more
exciting. Absolutely fabulous, yeah.
So, yes,
yeah.
Cool. Well, happy creating, and we look forward to your next adventures. Thank you very
much. Yes, we're very, very glad you're listening, and excited to share season 2 with you very soon.
So you're pumped and primed and ready to create your own satirical characters, yes? Marvellous, isn't he? Fabulous. Do go listen. It's a great, great show, and actually laugh out loud funny a lot of the time. So, yeah, go for it. A bit of painful comedy there too, which, you know, we all need in our lives now and then. Now, I just don't think there's enough satire made these days in indie podcasting. So come on, folks, band together. Get satirising this crazy planet and all who inhabit it. I mean, you know, it's not as if there's not any characters we can choose from to create satire, huh? you know, where are the audio versions of, say, The Day Today? Where are our Brass Eyes and Yes, Prime Ministers and Veep and Parks and Recreations of 2012? That was the week that was. Yeah, I'm going back a bit, but, you know, we need some topical satire, I think, for audio. Hmm? Where are they, man? Write them quick. Make things. Do it. So, yeah, let's satirise everything. Get going, guys. Be present in the present and make this crazy world funner. Yes. From my perspective as a character actress, I just think it's all about having a good play, isn't it? You know, just developing that timing, those reactions to your characters you're off set to, and well, just play with that script you've been given and hit those hit points for your improvising so you just have good fun. Anyway, just go with the moment. Yeah, all I can say is I just love the real-life edge there is to Dexter. He is possibly out there in real life, so you watch out, folks. Just to say a huge thanks to our patrons and to Tanya Milojevic for editing this fun together and cutting out all my bad jokes. And thanks so much to Rich Wentworth for lending their voice to this sketch at the beginning. Much appreciated. Hurrah! And to Matthew Boudreau of Oral Stages. Yes, thank you for launching us on this fun blog talk radio. Good luck to all who entered our scriptwriting competition. We're so excited. We're looking forward to announcing the winners who will have their work performed at the Vault Festival March the 7th this year and in Toronto and Calgary. It's so exciting. So yes, our indie producers will be fighting over what to produce very, very shortly. It's exciting time. So happy creating, folks, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.